Hello, everyone. Welcome to minute 42 of season 8 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast, where we fubar our way through the 1998 Steven Spielberg award-winning film Saving Private Ryan, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today on this lovely Tuesday is DJ Valentine of Simplistic Reviews. Welcome back to the show, DJ.
Thanks for having me. War was it good for? Apparently, podcasts. And that's what we're talking about here today. War. It's great. Everybody loves war. No, they don't.
They love war movies like this one because it
Exactly.
shows why you shouldn't have wars.
Don't do it. Don't do it.
That's right. So, minute 42 begins with overcast weather all across Normandy and ends with Caparzo trying to give up on some advice. So, yesterday we ended things with a huge panning shot of Omaha Beach, and we got to see a Jeep drive by that happened to have a number of people that we sort of recognize there. I don't know why we would recognize them, but so I've always wondered what's the story with the Jeep? Do you have any idea? In your research over the years, I know you've had a lot of one-on-one conversations with Spielberg and stuff like that, so
Yes.
I mean, do you know like what the story is? Like what's the Jeep and what happened with the Jeep?
I think it was a deleted scene, right? Is there a deleted scene between them before they had I can't remember specifically, but that would be my
Okay, well,
guess.
again, it's sort of a deleted scene because it's the idea that it's a scene that's in the script. I don't know if they
Shot it.
shot the scene or not. I've never seen video of it, but again, we know that Spielberg is, as we talked about yesterday, he's notorious for not releasing
He's cagey.
yeah.
It's very cagey.
He doesn't release stuff that that didn't make it into the final cut.
No.
So
He's Captain America in Endgame. He goes, "Are you gonna tell me about her?" No, nah, I don't think I will. That's even
Well,
something.
again, Miller does the same thing here. He makes the same type of comment later on, when he doesn't want to tell about his wife,
Yeah,
but in the Rosebush's speech.
exactly. Do you think the Russo brothers stole that from Saving Private Ryan? I wouldn't be surprised. They're both
There
military
you
men. They're
go.
both captains. You think they stole that for
It sounds that way.
Avengers
Sounds that way, especially the way you deliver it.
Endgame?
So it's possible. It could be that you've
It's
been inspired by Saving Private Ryan to do it that way. That's possible too.
true.
But still.
It's
So
true. It's true.
basically the Jeep, and I'll get into a little more information about the Jeep afterwards, but the Jeep that they drive through is known as a Willys MB. Okay, so this was a
Okay.
Jeep. Again, I'll explain a little bit more about the history of the Jeep itself afterwards, but so there is a scene that was in the script. Again, we're not sure if it was filmed or not, where Miller and his men are actually start off in a Jeep, and so the script even has them. They basically steal this Jeep because they go to the motor pool and they need something that's big enough, and the guy won't give them anything, and they end up convincing him. Because they're on their way, they tell him the story of that they're going to rescue, a young private who lost three of his brothers, and so the guy in the motor pool gets a little emotional, and then basically gives them the opportunity to take a Jeep that belongs to like a general or something or a colonel, that was visiting there at the time. And obviously this guy gets in a lot of trouble after they leave with the Jeep because he comes, the officer comes back to get his Jeep and something strange because it's not there anymore, that type of thing.
That doesn't really make sense, kind of plot hole wise, because if these orders to rescue, this is me script docking it, but these orders, I think Farina goes, these orders come right from the top, which means I want this to happen, so why would they, a captain in a unit on a specific mission given by top brass, need to beg or steal a Jeep? You think they'd be like, "I
Yeah.
need a Jeep,"
Okay.
and go out there
Maybe.
and get it?
that could be that could be the main reason why they cut that scene. You know, why they cut it from the movie. You know, that is only in the script. That I don't know. Right. So they end up driving the Jeep, and they reach a point where they've reached the front line, basically. And you know, when they're in this front line, they want to go through, and MPs won't let them go through because they said this area hasn't been you know, hasn't been taken over yet or anything like that. And then he says, look, I'm a captain, let me through. And they go through, and they start driving through, and then they turn into an area that has heavy artillery fire, and Mike is driving the whole time. And in the end, you know, they're avoiding all of these different artillery shells that are making lots of potholes in the road in front of them. And then in the end, they ditch it because they crash the, you know, Mike ends up crashing it into one of these ditches, and they all just run out. And then an artillery shell lands specifically on the Jeep and blows it up. Again.
This sounds like somebody trying to plus the script with an action
scene. It sounds like that's it. What it, and sounds like it doesn't me. It doesn't really work.
He didn't need it.
You know, but it's just funny. Right. I guess they love that original shot so much that they left in the fact that you know, we see them drive by on a Jeep. Because again, if you wouldn't have seen that, no one would have even questioned it. They wouldn't have said, okay, well, why are they walking? They wouldn't say that. They'd be like, okay, you know, that these guys are walking. That's it. But now that we see it, we say, oh, wait a second. Something's a little strange here, because they were in a Jeep.
Right.
What happened to the Jeep?
I would gather, just logically, you know, or at least not knowing anything about war, if you're going to go behind enemy lines to find a guy, you want to go on foot. You don't want to go with unless you're using a plane. I wouldn't want to go with a loud Jeep through German unoccupied territory. I want to kind of sneak around. So you're going to run into which they do later, a bunch of German units driving around a Jeep, as opposed to a tank, which would be a little bit more safe. I wouldn't want to drive around the Jeep. If I was Miller, I would be on foot as well, because I don't want to. You're essentially a sitting duck and a loud moving target.
Right, but on the other hand, you know, if you look at it from perspective that, you know, it'll get them to their objective quicker, you know, maybe it's worth it for them to take a Jeep. I don't know.
Not if you're dead. Because a Jeep is loud. And if you're driving across, you know, let's say you are going against German territory, and they're expecting you to come, not expecting you, but like, you know, fortified, you're going through minefields, you're driving in a Jeep through all types of crap. If you're on foot, it's a lot easier to traverse. It might be longer, but in terms of sneaking around, it's easier. You're quiet. It's harder to spot you from a distance, because I can spot a Jeep in the middle of the woods. I'll hear it coming.
So wait, if a Jeep drives through the woods, but there's nobody there to see it, you know, did it make any noise?
Here, yeah, but there is somebody there. The Nazis. The Nazis are there. The Nazis are there, man. Okay. They heard it. They will hear it.
It's very funny.
This is a Lord of the Rings situation. This is like, why didn't they take the Eagles? Well, you know, this is essentially why didn't they take the Jeep? Well, you know, it might be easier to sneak into Mordor on foot than to fly a gigantic Eagle where Mordor is surrounded by Nazgul, okay? Yes, I misdropped a J.R.R. Tolkien reference in a World War II movie. J.R.R. Tolkien was a soldier in World War I. Yeah, it's okay.
No, I'm perfect with that. You know, you won't hear any complaints from me about that. So again, it's not like Star Wars, where, you know, once you see the stormtrooper bang his head, you can never unsee it. So but there it's like funny. Here you see it and it just makes you wonder, okay, you know, what happened in that scene that they cut out.
Right. Unless it's like, I mean, probably I wouldn't even think like of it. I would probably just be like, Yeah, he probably gathered up his unit, had a guy at a Jeep pick them everybody up across the battlefield, meet up at this location, and they go off. That's go on.
Well, no, but he does say meet me at the motor pool. Think. You know, last week he said
he does say that. Yeah. No, it's clear that it's clearly like something they wanted to do as a scene, especially as a script. But even if I didn't even clock it, them in the Jeep, I was like, yeah, they're probably just picking people. My mind will fill in the blank essentially of, oh yeah, they're probably just, you know, meet up, whatever. I'm not even like thinking like, where'd the Jeep go? I'm just like, okay, they probably just use the Jeep to go to a certain area and then they walked, because we cut like from there to God knows how much time in between. So the passage of time, we don't know. We've cut out edited out the battle scene that they wrote in the script, or in my mind, my headcanon is like, yeah, they probably just drove up to where their territory ends, and then they go on foot, covert style. But I'm feeling it in my mind, and I bet you most audiences are not even thinking that deep into it.
Right.
But when you watch it over and over and over again, like you're saying, you're like, huh, that's weird. But yeah, and fresh in your mind, you're just thinking, because we're not military strategists in terms of how to do things, but you'll just fill that blank in.
Correct. So, okay. So now let's talk about Jeeps in general. When do you think they first started producing Jeeps? And like, what was the point of having a Jeep?
I had a Jeep too. I had a Jeep Cherokee. I'm going to say, oh God, I'm getting the year. I'm going to say not 39. I'm probably way off. I have no idea.
You're not far off, because the Jeeps that we see here were only starting to be created in 1940. Okay. Because the whole idea was that they wanted to make, little cars, I guess you can say, that had off-road capability, and they were light military utility vehicles. Right. How many do you think they built for the U.S., for the Allied forces during World War II?
It'd probably be hard to produce. I'm going to say
they produced more than 600,000 Jeeps.
Oh, jeez. I was way off. Way off.
Yes.
Wow.
Holy crap. Mass-produced four-wheel drive car.
So why is this guy so stringent on these? Seriously? Give him a Jeep. Shut up. Get out of the way.
I don't know. apparently, Eisenhower wrote in his memoirs that most senior officers regarded the Jeep as one of the five most important pieces of equipment that were vital to success in both Africa and Europe.
You wouldn't happen to have to listen to the other ones, would you?
No, sorry.
Oh.
And George Marshall.
So that's a great list.
That's right. And George Marshall, who we talked about 2 weeks ago, who was the chief of staff, he called it the America's greatest contribution to modern warfare.
Thanks. Not bullets? Oh, yes, we didn't invent bullets.
Yeah. Bullets came many years before. But, So do you know what the nickname of a Jeep is? Of a military Jeep. Military Jeep. Not your Cherokee.
Military Jeep. Not my Cherokee, no. I have no idea what it is.
They are known as Leaping Lenas.
I'd have been here for 18 years. I'd have never got that. I would have never guessed.
Because there's a picture.
Leaping Lenas?
There's a picture from 1941 of a Jeep that is basically flying in a photo. And
okay.
You know, and it was towing a anti-tank gun with it. So they decided to call it a Leaping Lena. Someone named it that.
False advertising is why they call it a Leaping, because there's no way a Jeep is flying through the air with an anti-tank gun on the back. It's the way.
You never know. No, I mean, first of all, it's a great shot. That's what it comes down to. Right. It's a great picture, but it's just not. I guess it's not something that's visible that's going to always happen.
No.
Yeah. Now, why do you think they called it a Jeep? Like, where's that name come from?
If it's military, I'm assuming it's an acronym of some sort. I don't know. I was assuming it's an acronym that I cannot remember or know off the top of my head.
Okay, so there's a lot of controversy as to where it originally came from. Apparently there were other type of vehicles that were known as Jeeps during World War One.
Okay.
And it was slang that was also used for new uninitiated recruits or other personnel who still had to prove their worth.
Okay.
And therefore, guys in the motor pool would start calling it a Jeep. Now it's a there it can be used as an adjective also in slang as a Jeepy, similar to like someone who's kooky or goofy,
Okay. All right.
silly, awkward, or foolish. I guess that sort of makes sense because that's sort of the idea that this is an off-road vehicle. That's lightweight,
Okay. All right.
That's why many people started calling it a Jeep.
I do remember getting my Jeep in college. I went to Florida State University and going off-road with it on campus, which you could probably never do today because you would be arrested. But yes, I use the four-wheel
On
drive
most college
capability for
campuses these days, they don't arrest you for very much, so you don't have to worry about that.
that. That is true. That is true. I might still get away with it, but yeah. I felt like when I was doing it, I was like, I'm doing something super illegal right now, and I don't care because I'm stupid and I'm young. But thinking about it now, I was like, yeah, I should have went to jail. Dude, I'm driving my Jeep by Strozier Library on the land is green. Nobody seems there's not a lot of police security around. Who cares? Let's do some donuts.
Jeeps were also widely used in Korea and during the Korean War. And basically there are many uses for a Jeep other than using them to drive places. Many places because it has a flat hood, so it was used as a commander's map table, a chaplain's field altar, GI's poker table, or sometimes even used for field surgery.
Ooh.
And Jeeps have been used for as power plants, light sources, improvised stove for field rations, or a hot water source for shaving.
Now, have you ever had a field ration before?
Yes, I have.
Now,
Probably not the same ones. Probably not the same ones they have in this movie during World War II.
no.
But I've had.
I've had an MRE,
Yes,
and
I.
that is the worst thing I've ever eaten in my life. It is god awful. I don't know how. And my roommate was a Marine, so that he made me try one of his, and I was just like, "This is how are you doing this? Dirt would be better than this. What are you doing?"
Oh wow. Why is he stocking up on them?
He just happened to have one, and he was like, "Hey, you want to try this MRE?" I think it was mac. It was, if I remember correctly, it was macaroni and cheese and something else. And I thought it was cool how he heats it up. It's like a thing where you just need water, and it kind of like warms a plate on in it or something like that. Again, I'm bad with the technical terms, but I tried like a bite, and was like, "What you eat? You put this in your body?" This is, it's like it keeps you alive, man, when you're in the, blah, blah, blah. It's like, oh, I get it, but I would never. No, I'm good. I'm very good.
Oh wow. Okay. Okay, so you wanted to know what the other four
Oh, well, you found it. Good, great,
yes
great,
I
great, great.
did. Yes I did.
I'm going to say a knife.
No, pieces
Yeah,
of
I guess so.
equipment.
Oh, okay. A helmet?
No, but something that was just designed for World War II.
Oh, okay. What else do we got?
Okay, so what we have here is the bulldozer, the Jeep, the 2.5 ton truck,
Bulldozer.
the C-47 airplane, and surprisingly, none of these things were designed to be used for combat. And the other one is the DUKW amphibious car.
Oh, that makes sense. Rivers and if you yeah. I'm assuming that has the carburetor on the top so it doesn't flood when you go in the water, I would assume.
Right. He basically said in his memoir, I actually even found what page it's on, in his 63 and 164, and where he basically says that logistics win wars. And the idea of having these five pieces of equipment is essential to them winning in World War II, both in Africa and in Europe, which is pretty amazing. You know, that's think about it. The Allied commander says we won because of five vehicles, not because of the millions of soldiers.
No, it's the vehicles, man. Come on, it's the planes. They're just meat puppets, the soldiers. We have planes. I looked up the MRE that my friend, his name, my roommate, Jerron, had me eat. It was a pouch that heats up, and I looked it up. It's got salt, magnesium. When you add water, essentially it rusts really fast, and that gives off heat, and that's what heats up the food. So you're literally eating magnesium macaroni. So no, not my favorite thing in the world to put in my body.
Yeah, I can sort of understand that. Okay, so let's move along in this minute, because we haven't really talked about anything that's happened in this minute yet.
Sorry.
No, that's okay.
The poster shot. Let's talk about the poster shot.
We'll get to the poster.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. All right, so we talked about the fact that we get this overcast area. It looks like it's about to rain. And then we get, as you said, the poster shot of, the soldiers walking in V form. You know, they look like they're flying geese, the way that they're walking there, which is done really well. Now, it looks like it's raining. It looked like it was raining, but we don't see any rain here. You know, because, right. After we see them walking, we hear sheep's bleeding, and we hear collar bells ringing and things like that. And then, I mean, I've always loved this shot, because first we get the cover shot, as you said, the poster shot of them walking towards us. And then the scene changes and we see them from afar, walking basically across the screen, from left to right. Right. And then after a few seconds, after the sheep, the group of sheep run by, so then we get a close up again, and we see Mellish looking back, watching the rear, and at this point Upham runs over to him and taps him on the shoulder and goes, "Hey." Now my first question here is where did Upham get the gun?
I think they gave it to him. There's time in between when he leaves to where we are. And I think that's when he'd probably be given a gun before they go out into the thing. Again, there's probably deleted, whatever. But I think from when he leaves the tent to when we are now, hours have passed. And we've probably skipped over, all right, here's your weapon, we're going this way, but that stuff. They just cut right to them right in the field.
Okay.
Get the movie going, get on the mission.
Yeah, no, obviously. All right, so he just goes, "Hey." And then Mellish turns to him and goes, "You want your head blown off, you fancy little f***? Don't you ever touch me with those little rat claws again. Get the f*** back in formation."
Now, I like this scene, maybe because I hate Upham, but because Mellish is the only other one I can think of on the top of my head in the unit that shows clear signs of PTSD or battle fatigue than Miller. Because we see in the earlier scene after he's like almost in he's like laughing when he's laughing, and then he's like holding his head and he's like in shock. So sneaking up on a guy like that is unwise, I would say. And it's kind of show this entire scene again that we're going to get into should be taught in schools, writing schools, and how to introduce an ensemble and get the audience to understand and care about each character. Horror movies should watch. Alien Romulus writer, you should watch the scene, because you get every character in the unit kind of that we're going to go through this week, and know with little, very small information who they are, how they act, what's up with them, and they don't say a lot. But I like, oh, I get this guy. Oh, I get this guy too. Oh, I get this guy too.
Right.
And it's very bare minimum stuff.
It's very funny that you just mentioned Alien Romulus. I just saw it earlier this week, and that was the main thing that bothered me with the movie, that you don't get to know any of the characters, and you don't
And
really,
you don't care.
right? You have no way of even
You don't
differentiating
see.
between them, you know?
Imagine you get a scene like this, in, though this is brilliant, but in that, something similar where you kind of get these characters. And they tried, but it's you don't. Horror movies are ensemble casts. If you want me to care when they, spoiler alert, die, you want to make me care who they are.
Right.
And. Or at least notice them, understand them. At least let me understand them. In certain other films, I'll leave Alien Romulus alone. You don't. You don't. They're blanket. You don't even know their names. And the way I know Mellish and Upham and Carparzo and Jackson, Ryback, I know them.
Ryben,
Because
Ryben,
they
Ryben. Ryback
Ryback,
is
sorry, Ryman. I don't know
Ryback.
Mellish.
Ryback is
I
someone
know.
else. Ryback is from.
Ryback is Casey Ryback. I'm thinking of Under Siege.
That's
I
right.
apologize.
I was just gonna say that was
Ryman.
Under Siege.
No. I'm just in terms of you get them. Yeah, I know. I know how Ryman's the loudmouth, and then you got Mellish, who's kind of very jittery. He's got the PTSD. He's looking over his shoulder because he's so shook. He's so everything out of his mouth is. I don't want to die. I don't want. I get it. I get them. So when things happen later, I understand. I'm compelled to care.
Right.
When you make me characters that I don't care about, then I'm like, oh, I'm starting looking at my phone because I don't care what happens to them.
That's
I
right.
don't give a.
Sure. And then Upham starts stammering and he goes, I was just wondering where you're from. That's. And he just gets like this dirty
Get
look.
away from me, man.
And then he just like quickens his pace a little bit, moves forward. And,
Mellish doesn't trust them, and he was right not to trust him because
That's
Mellish is
right.
horrible. Yeah.
Yep. I agree with you on that one. And so he just moves forward and moves up to next to Caparzo. And then he turns, up and turns to him and goes, Caparzo, isn't it? And he goes, hey, drop dead, Corporal. Because, gotcha. And another thing, every time you salute the captain and make him a target for the Germans, so do us all a favor. Don't do it. Especially. And then he gets cut off because that's where the minute ends. And like you said, it's a great half a minute where we are quickly introduced to these two characters. One of the brilliant things about watching this movie for the first time is throughout the entire Omaha Beach scene, you don't know which characters you're going to be following through the course of this movie or not.
Right.
So we do see Caparza, we see Wade, we see Mellish, we see Jackson, we see Ryman, we see all of these characters, but they're among others also that some of the others don't make it through and stuff like that. So it's great that then they're all nameless characters, faceless characters, whatever. And then as the movie progresses, here this is the perfect scene where they're introducing us to these characters, and we're hearing animosity from these characters towards Upham. They are not happy that Upham is there with them,
He's the new
and
puppy.
they
He's the
that's
new
right.
child.
I wouldn't even say he's a new puppy because usually people like puppies. They don't like him. They don't want him there.
Usually other dogs like mine doesn't like other dogs, new dogs anywhere near him. It doesn't matter if they're just cute and furry and not doing anything. If my dog sees a puppy, any other dog, he's not, he's like, what? Get away from me. What is this dog? Get out
Right.
of here. What are you? So yeah.
Exactly. Makes a lot of sense. Right. So that's how this minute ends. Did you have anything else you want to say about this minute?
This is kind of the and if you're watching this movie for the first time, what's wrong with you? But this is the first time, well, not the first time. This is Vin Diesel who plays Caparzo, and watched this movie, didn't take any notice of him other than he's really good in the movie. But then he never like for me. Vin Diesel only popped for me in a movie called Pitch Black that came out 2 years or maybe a couple. I can't remember. I think maybe 2 or 3 years
Two years later,
later.
came out in 2000.
It,
Came out in
right,
2000, 2 years
that's
later.
when. And these was like, wow, this is a movie star. And then I like made the connection. Like, oh wait, he's the guy from Saber. I didn't, because he's so not Vin Diesel in this role, as we stereotypically know him now, where he's just like an untouchable god who drives cars. He's just a regular, normal guy who's flawed. It's very interesting to watch him, and he's only in the movie for a little bit, but just to watch him in this movie, it's like, wow, Vin Diesel Steven Spielberg cast Vin Diesel, huh? He might have seen something, because you tell who's Vin Diesel, oh, Dom, that's all they don't know anything about his right. acting, his acting capabilities. So it's good to see him in this.
Yeah, very cool. All right, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Tom Hanks Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five Tom Hanks performances. So, DJ, once again, why don't you start with your number five and work your way up?
Again, I'm not going to have what's on your list, because your list is pretty much, not your list, you specifically, Rob. I'm talking about you, the public, the person listening. I'm going to have my own personal Tom Hanksian list, okay? And my co-hosts know this. They know how much I love these two movies in the bottom. We'll skip the mystery. Saving Private Ryan's number one. We already know that. It's the greatest Tom Hanks role ever. Or none.
Yeah, but you got to start at number five.
That's not the mystery, okay? The mystery is my bottom four, okay? My bottom four is going to be all over the place, all right? Number five, Dragnet, Strebeck, Tom Hanks at his funniest. Tom Hanks used to be freaking hilarious, okay? He was Ryan Reynolds of his day for me. Especially the character he plays in the movie, the remake of the TV show Dragnet, the comedy Dragnet starring Dan Aykroyd and him in the late, great Christopher Plummer. Also as the villain. Yes, Dragnet, he's fantastic in the movie. He's hilarious. My favorite color is blue. He's fantastic. Go ahead.
My favorite quote from that movie is, he goes, I just came back from visiting Connie Sway.
You mean the Virgin Connie Sway?
The Virgin Connie Sway.
They made a music video for this movie where Tom Hanks sings, and it's freaking fantastic. Dragnet's fantastic. Don't sleep on Dragnet. It's number four. It's kind of where I was in my youth, and I was like, oh, Tom Hanks to me, funny guy. And this is the type where it's kind of like blended to, wow, he's funny, but there's dark, dark moments in this comedy that people would throw away. And it's called Turner and Hooch. I don't know if you've ever seen this movie, but Tom Hanks plays a cop, and he's partnered with a dog, and I am a dog person, and Craig T. Nelson's his chief of police, and spoiler alert.
Reginald Bell Johnson's his partner.
Reginald Bell Johnson's.
Or not really. He's
kind of like his.
He's not really a partner. He's his mentor. No, isn't he training him because he's about to leave? He's retiring.
Something.
Or
yeah.
Moving
it's
or something.
It's like that. It's got a little Die Hard connection. But the part I really like about the movie is it's kind of like a family film for like 75% of it. And then there's scenes near the end where it gets and turns into like a Shane Black movie. Like a dark Shane Black movie. I'm like, wait, what? And then I guess the first time I kind of got to see some of the levels of, oh, Tom Hanks can do drama really, really well. Oh, well, he might have some stuff to do here. He might be a good actor. they'll make something of this Tom Hanks guy. So yes, Turner and Hooch, very good movie. I won't spoil what's going on in the movie, but if you're a dog person, you'll love it. It's Marley and Me meets Lethal Weapon. Next one, of course, this will be my cliche one. It's Forrest Gump, of course. I don't think the CGI kind of holds up, but his performance is fantastic in terms of just you love the guy. And he's hilarious. And he's are you dumb? Are you playing? What did he say? Are you something? Or you're stupid? Stupid is stupid. Yeah, that whole
stupid
thing.
Stupid it's is.
Like, yeah, it's iconic. It's an iconic character. Never touch it. Don't make any sequels. Stay away from it. Leave it alone. It's a fantastic bottle movie. Jenny was a whore. Next one. next one is. I think the last episode we were talking about movies that made me cry. This didn't make me cry, but it got really close. It's just because of one scene, and I'm talking about Captain Phillips. And the thing I want to underline about Captain Phillips is, if you ever watch that movie, it's very good, very tense. Paul Greengrass, I think it's Paul Greengrass, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, it is.
There's a scene near the very end where Tom Hanks is with an actual EMT and she's doing treatment, just checking him for wounds and stuff like that. I dare anyone to watch that scene. Just watch it. Watch Tom Hanks in it and realize as you're watching it, nothing's wrong with him. He's pretending that he's in shock. And the way he's doing it is so, I don't want to curse it, realistic. It like just floored me. Watch it. Just watch it. Pause this podcast. It's on YouTube. Look up the Captain Phillips end scene where Tom Hanks, he's literally like in stunned. He has just been rescued. Spoiler alert. This is a true story. Anyway. He's just been rescued and EMT's doing like checking his vitals and stuff and just asking him questions. And Tom Hanks is like stammering and can't, he's kind of like half paying attention and he's essentially broken. And you got to realize nothing's wrong with Tom Hanks. He has not been shot at. He's acting in that scene. And it's just maybe a 2-3 minute scene. And he's phenomenal. It might be his favorite, my favorite bit of acting from him, other than in this movie that we're talking about, Saving Private Ryan. Because it's so, the level of difficulty for me to believe that Tom Hanks is going through PTSD. When again, I want to underline, what's wrong with him? He's on a movie set. Or he's on a boat that there's cameras around him. There's no terrorists anywhere near his vicinity, and you believe every bit of it. So yeah, number one, of course, Saving Private Ryan. It is Tom Hanks to me. Is Tom Hanks's magnum opus. It's just such a great character. When people are like, show me what Tom Hanks can do. This kind of, you get the drama, you get the laughs, you get the action Tom Hanks. You get every bit of Tom Hanks you get in this one role. It makes me hate Roberto Benigni. I hate him to this day because I think he beat him for this, I believe. And every time I see Roberto Benigni, I'm just like, you stole an Oscar. The Oscar you stole from him that Tom Hanks won, though he has his own Oscars. This is the one I wish he would have gotten because this is the Tom Hanks role that I love the most. So, yeah.
Oh wow, very cool. I definitely agree with you that he should have beat Roberto Benigni for sure.
Yeah, that I mean, and I get it, but no, Roberto, no. I get it, but no.
Well, let's put it this way: this movie holds up a lot better than Life is Beautiful.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. Though again, I know there's Life is Beautiful fans. They'll look in the comments. They'll come at me, but I'm sorry. Saving Private Ryan, I think, is just it's chef's kiss. It's cinema, as they were.
All right, great. So, DJ, why don't you tell people once again where they can find DJ Valentine?
You can find me at simplistic.reviews is the website. You can check Simplistic Reviews on YouTube, TuneIn, iTunes, Spotify, all that stuff. And we do commentaries and we talk movies, we talk TV. We do little mini podcasts. We don't talk about the high culture that Rob has here. We kind of talk about the dredges of cinema. So check us out. We have a good time doing it too.
Well, it's people are looking for diversity. We need to be the exact same thing.
Do you like Neil Breen? Do you like Andy Sedaris? We're going to get into it.
Exactly. All right, and finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, MovieRobMinute.com. And if you want to send me an email, you can send it to MovieRobMinute@MovieRob.net. So until tomorrow, earn this.
My solitude.